Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Under the Hoodies. This is Bill Kegel. Brian Shipley is joining me. Brian, how's it going, buddy?
Not bad, Bill. How about yourself?
Oh, a lot's changed in the last 3 weeks. By this time tomorrow, I'll no longer be employed at the current company I work at. I'll be starting on Monday at a new place. Really looking forward to it. That's pretty much it, man. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Nice little bump in pay. Anyway, Brian, let's get right into it. We haven't talked in a while. Mike's not going to be on the show today. He's busy with I think he has a wedding this weekend, and I know he's been just working like crazy. He's had some trouble with the company he's working for, which, again, we've mentioned in the past, but it's not exactly the greatest company in the world to work for, but we won't keep making that point home.
Unless you like pushing soft sell, then it is.
That's a good point. Then it's a fantastic place to work. If you're more interested in selling $19 pieces of foam over $120 pairs of sneakers, then that's the place for you. But if you like logic, don't work for this company. Anyway, Brian, today we're going to, we talked a little earlier, we're going to touch on some We're gonna touch on the NBA Finals, a little bit on the NBA Draft. We're going to go over the MLB Draft. Basically, I know nothing, so I'm going to ask you questions and just let you have at it, because your knowledge about amateur sports is just, second to none. You're the Keith Law, the Todd McShay, the all of these guys rolled into one. So I'm looking forward to what you have to say. But first, Brian, let's start off with the NFL draft. We haven't talked since we did the big draft show. So who do you think came out looking the best after that draft? What team do you think did the best? I would probably have a better way to phrase it. It would be, what team do you think did the best job at drafting?
Well, usually I hate to, to sort of agree with the crowd, but in this instance, I just don't know how you can come to any other conclusion other than, at least looking at it, we really won't know the full answer until a few years from now. But I thought the 49ers draft was just stupendous. I mean, their GM has really found a way to sort of rig the system, get a lot of extra picks. He fleeced the Denver Broncos. He got an extra pick from the Broncos, I think a fourth rounder next year to move down to, or excuse me, let them move up in the second round to take Latimer, the wide receiver from Indiana. And then, just moving up four spots, he got the next pick right after that and only gave up like a seventh rounder, I believe. So, he does a real great job of sort of getting them extra picks. And all in all, I just thought they had home run after home run as far as guys that, for whatever reason, sort of slipped on the boards, be it injury concerns, positional value, whatever. But Jimmy Ward, who, I absolutely loved from Northern Illinois, and he's the type of guy that's going to step in right away and help their secondary, which I think if you're going to take a look at a weak part of their team, that would be it. And he can come in right away, play slot corner, and eventually I think he's going to be a really good starting free safety. But the picks that, I really felt I liked the most, I mean, Carlos Hyde's going to get a lot of the publicity because he played at a major university and he is an interesting back. But I loved their Marcus Martin pick from USC. Every year we see where these stud centers kind of get pushed down the draft board because centers aren't the most valued position in the NFL. Yet in a few years, those guys always turn out to be a steal of the drafts because they can be pillars of your offensive line for the next 8 to 10 years. And him, along with the guy from Colorado State that your Giants took, I thought were clearly head and shoulders above the best two picks. And even though I like Weisberg, I think is how you pronounce his name, from Colorado State, I think he's a better player. But I think a few years from now, Marcus Martin's going to turn out to be not only the best center of the draft, but I think one of the best old linemen from the draft, and he's got a really bright future. Then lastly, a couple other picks that I really liked there's Chris Borland, a overachieving tackling machine. Might not have supreme athleticism. If he did, I think he would have been a top 20 pick based on his production. But that just seems to be the perfect pick for him because he can fill in while Navarro Bowman's out. And then, he gives them some depth assurance behind Willis and Bowman and can come in and make plays at least in the run game right away. And then the guy who I really thought was a steal of the draft was Brandon Thomas, who played left tackle at Clemson. Unfortunately, doing a private workout for an NFL team, he tore his ACL. If he didn't tear his ACL, and let me preface this by saying most thought his future in the NFL would be a guard, not a left tackle, although it's certainly not all the realm of possibility he can stay there, I think you're looking at a surefire top 35, top 40 pick, maybe even a guy that could have snuck into the back end of the first round. So to get him in the fifth pick, I mean, I think that's stupendous value. They can put him on IR, let him have a year to learn the offense, learn the nuance of the NFL, and then all of a sudden, starting the 2015 year, you have a guy that was a top 40 talent to add to an already deep draft class. So I really thought they did a nice job. There's one other guy I liked a lot, too, who we talked about in the pre-draft, and that's Aaron Lynch, who is a DN outside linebacker from South Florida. He had a terrific freshman season in Notre Dame. He decided to transfer, kind of had a down year. But, again, this was a guy that if he could have come out as a true freshman, he might have been a top 15 pick that year. So just another interesting, talented guy that they add to a roster that has a ton of interesting and talented guys. So all in all, I'd have to go with the 49ers. How would you think? Would you think have the best weekend, I should say?
You know what? I don't think I could have said any of that better than you there with the 49ers. But I think St. Louis is another team that had a really nice draft. I think that the top of the draft, especially getting Aaron Donald, just to add to that, or that defensive line is just kind of insane. And I don't know. I think that. I think that was probably one of the better picks. I mean, they got Trey Mason, kind of coupled with Zach Stacy, which I thought was a really kind of an under the radar move that I don't know that I've heard at least that much about. I'm not sure much about LaMarcus Joyner. I know if I remember right, I think you made a briefly mention him before as being a potential impact guy. Or maybe it was Mike. I apologize. I can't remember. But yeah, they seem to have went all defensive, or mostly defensive, on the defensive side of the ball. And I thought they're another team that had a really good draft. And if you think about it, it's kind of smart given the division that they play in, because it's clearly the best division of football. And you and I can remember a couple of years ago. I think the Rams won the division at 7-9, and just to see how fast the whole division has turned around. Like Arizona was 10-6 last year, and would have been a playoff team, in most years. But and actually, were the only team I think last year to beat the Seahawks at home, albeit on an amazing catch by Michael Floyd. But it was that division is just rock solid. But I think St. Louis is sort of. Solidify their defense as being, one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, behind Seattle's in the league. So I think St. Louis had a fantastic draft.
Bill, I love your thinking, because that would have been my second choice, undoubtedly. I thought they too had a great draft, although I thought the only person they drafted was some Michael Sam, based on the draft prospects that are getting coverage from their team on ESPN and NFL Network. But anyways, I couldn't agree more. I mean, a front four of Chris Long, Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, and Michael Brockers. Those are four guys that were all top 15 picks that have elite-level talent, and they're going to be playing indoors on the fast track, in a loud stadium where they're going to get that extra split second jump off the ball. I mean, my God, if I'm an offensive line coach having to play in St. Louis, I'm going to be petrified. I was actually the one that was talking about LaMarcus Joyner. I love LaMarcus Joyner. Not so much similar playing styles, but just the way that Florida State used him. He reminds me of a young Brian Dawkins, because they would put him right on the outside to have him blitz and come after the quarterback. He got that done. He comes in and sticks people in the run game, and he's versatile enough that he could even play a little bit of corner if you need, because his coverage skills are good. You know, that was a great pick as well. And then again, of course, he talked about Trey Mason, who I think you could make a strong case was the most talented running back in the draft. I thought he was a great value pick. We haven't even talked about the first pick, the second overall pick in the draft, a guy that, I think I said before the draft.
Yeah, Greg Robinson,
I've seen enter the draft in years. And then lastly, I thought they had one of my favorite steals of the draft, a guy from Missouri in the late day three picks. I know it wasn't Michael Sam. It was E.J. Gaines, a corner from Missouri, who's been a starter for them for a couple years and one of the top-notch corners in the SEC. I thought he was a great value pick. And I couldn't agree more as far as you know, I think they're ready to take the next step. And if they played in a different division, I'd even say they'd be one of my surefire playoff teams. Although, let me point out, I've been saying they've been my sleeper team for the past few years, and they've kind of, you know, made me look foolish halfway through. But you got to love their talent. I've always been really had the utmost respect for Jeff Fisher. I think the snitch, otherwise known as Greg Williams, is one of the worst human beings in the NFL. But, you know, you can't argue with the results he gets on defense, and he'll be the new full-time defensive coordinator this year. They'll get after it in sort of a Neanderthal way under his leadership. And I think they're going to be a really good team.
Yeah, I agree. I could not agree more. I mean, well, real quick, I want to get off on a little bit of a Trent Baalke topic. He's the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. The deal that Kaepernick signed, kind of an amazing deal, actually, considering you get a guy that's considered by a lot of people to be a franchise guy, franchise quarterback in a league that if you don't have a franchise quarterback, you're not going to make the playoffs no matter how good your talent is. And the Rams are a fantastic example of that. They have Sam Bradford, who they're paying a lot of money. They're paying franchise-level quarterback, you know, money. He's the last guy to get that, you know, big money first overall pick. They signed Kaepernick to the most team-friendly $120 million deal I've ever seen in my life. So what do you think about that? I mean, were you as impressed as I am by that? Because I thought that was just the move it was just a stroke of genius, I thought, by their front office and Trent Baalke. And taken over the team in 2011. I mean, they've been the best team. They've been the best team in football over that time. So go ahead.
Yeah, he's terrific, and you're right. You know, they really structure that in a prudent way. And I've always been a big Kaepernick guy. I thought a few years ago I liked him more than Cam Newton, which you might be able to convince me the other way around now. But I thought it was a terrific deal. And I think if you take a look at quarterbacks, and this really kind of goes for players in all sports, where players that can do multiple things tend to age better than players that don't. We're always going to have the exception to the rules, like a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, et cetera, that are, you know, just pocket passers that stay at an elite level forever. But I'm talking more about the majority, not the select few. And I think you see guys that are just traditional, can only drop back quarterbacks, you got to protect us. You see those guys a lot of times have real steep declines later on in their career. You know, guys like Mark Bolger, Drew Bledsoe, Matt Hasselbeck, all these guys sort of come to my mind when about that.
You're starting to kill me because Eli Manning is starting to just creep in my head when you're saying all this right now, and I'm you know, my iPad might go out from the tears that are falling on it.
Right. Eli is a good example, too. But then it's sort of the same thing with scramblers, where although he had a late career renaissance as a quarterback for the Vikings, a pocket quarterback, you know, Randall Cunningham kind of went in that steep decline. Vince Young, even, you know, Michael Vick, although there's certainly a litany of other reasons that contributed to that. But I think when you have a guy like Kaepernick that can scramble, make plays with his feet, has a rocket arm, can fit the ball in tight spots, and really can beat you in just an array of ways, I think those are the type of guys, the sort of the new wave of quarterbacks that are really going to age well. So I feel like that's one of the few NFL contracts where I think it's a good bet that the player actually sees the full course of the deal, even though it is team-friendly for the 49ers. So I thought it was a win-win for them, and I really think Kaepernick's going to take another step this year. And as far as I'm concerned, he's already at least in the top 12 quarterbacks for me. I really think he's a good player and still getting better.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, and last thing in the NFL draft I wanted to ask you, it's because we haven't talked about it, and since both of us, I mean, if we were writing down a list of our favorite teams in NFL order, both of us would probably put the Buffalo Bills second. What did you think of the Sammy Watkins deal? Do you think it was worth giving up what they gave up to get a wide receiver, as special as he is? How do you view that deal?
No, of course not. I thought the trade was awful. And let me preface this by saying, love, love, love the player. Hate the trade. Like, I'm never giving up a first-round pick to move up a few spots unless it's to land a guy that I feel extremely confident is going to be my quarterback of the future and a franchise-level quarterback.
Right. In my opinion, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to make this point real quick and just kind of let you branch off of it a little bit. The only guy I can think of in the last 5 years that has come out in the draft that seems to be worth that kind of that kind of haul is Andrew Luck. He's the only player. RG3, no. Cam Newton, no. I mean, to give up that kind of haul and just, I don't know, Andrew Luck is the only player I can think of in the last 5 years worth that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was way too steep a price, but, you know, they're going to get an electric playmaker. And let me also say, though, if you just look at who they draft in the 2014 draft, take out trades and all that, that would have been my third team for the best draft after the 49ers and the Rams.
They had a real nice draft.
Doug Whaley hit home runs with his pick. Obviously, we don't need to talk about Sammy Watkins. We know how great he projects to be in the NFL. But Cyrus Quandro, who if he could have came out as a true sophomore, would have been a bona fide top 10 pick above both his teammates, DJ Fluker and Chance Warmack, who both are top 12 picks in the 2013 draft. And this guy looks like he could be the day one starting right tackle for him. If Cordy Glenn gets hurt or anything, he can flip over to left tackle. And I really like the mean bug on his face after they asked him about falling out of the first round. I think that's going to be a nice starting tackle for him for the next 8 to 10 years. And then we take a look at some of their other picks. You know, our pre-draft show, two of my favorite sleeper linemen, they got in the 5th and 7th rounds, and Cyril Richardson, who was the Big 12 lineman of the year, a big guy that can just move defensive tackles off the ball. He's not very athletic. Aaron Donald sort of made him look silly at the Senior Bowl, and he went from looking like a second, third-round pick to falling all the way down to the 5th. But you know what? Aaron Donald made a lot of people look silly with his play last year at Pittsburgh. So I thought that was a great value. Then Sean Charles Henderson, who looks the part but has you know, well-documented off-the-field issues. That is my perfect type of draft or seventh-round pick. I'm trying to hit a home run. If I hit on it, that's going to be one of the best picks my franchise ever made because I'm going to get him at pretty much minimum wage for the first 4 years. And if I end up cutting him because he turns out that he doesn't have the proper work ethic or the off-the-field concerns, whatever, au revoir. You know what? I'd say 85% of seventh-round picks get cut within the first year and a half anyways. So no harm, no foul. I really thought, you know, both those picks were terrific. And I just really thought they had a real nice all-around draft.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that I think Buffalo – And just sort of get on the Buffalo of the team a little bit. I mean, that pick, if E.J. Manuel turns out to be a disaster this year or gets hurt, that pick could be a top five pick. But on the other hand, if Manuel, you hear nothing but good things coming out of the Bills camp from guys saying that, oh, the light switched on. He's picking up the playbook, you know, ways he wasn't last year. He looks sharper at the OTAs when he's throwing the ball, all this kind of stuff. I mean, that could be a pick in the 20s. So it Buffalo, it's really hard to tell with them because, in my opinion, I mean, other than, you know, maybe the offensive line, they're kind of a playoff team at every position. Would you agree with that?
I really like the talent on their team. I think after the Rams, they might have the best front four when you look at Kyle Williams, who I think is the best defensive tackle in football. Marcel Darius, when he's not drag racing or smoking synthetic pot, is a pretty darn good player too. Then you have Mario Williams. They have Kiko Alonso, who I think might have had the best rookie season out of anybody last year on defense. They signed Brandon Spikes, who should help shore up their run defense. And even with the loss of Jairus Byrd, I think they have some real interesting young safeties back there as far as Duke Williams is concerned and Aaron Williams, who they re-signed to a big deal. And watch out for Stephon Gilmore this year. I think this is the year that he really takes that next leap. That's five corners in the NFL because, you know, I think he has that type of ability. And then on offense, they're going to run the ball. They were one of the best running teams last year with Jackson, C.J. Spiller, and an offensive line for a head coach who, you know, is really good at drawing up, you know, sort of running plays for the offensive line. And then I really like their weapons. Sammy Watkins, explosive playmaker. Robert Woods, a real nice possession wide receiver, was one of the top prospects from the 2013 draft. And then Marquise Goodwin, who is the epitome of a situational deep threat. He might be the fastest man in the NFL who can help open things up underneath. And then let's not forget, if you want to use people that they got from the draft in 2014, they got a sixth-round pick in Mike Williams from Tampa Bay, who another guy that sort of has some off-the-field concerns, but Doug Marrone was his college coach. And if they can get him focused on football, I mean, I think that Mike Williams is one of the best number two wide receivers in the NFL. So I really like their talent. Like you said, it's going to come down to E.J. Manuel, but I'm still a believer in E.J. I think he's got all the talent in the world, the right mindset and work ethic. I think he takes the next step this year and at least has them in the hunt for a playoff spot. I'm not sure if they'll make it, but I think they'll be in the hunt.
I couldn't agree more. I think that I think it really all just depends on E.J. And I think everybody last year knew E.J. was a project coming out of college. I think that people should be patient, even though it's easier said than done with the good folks here in Buffalo. But they've been patient for
right.
Since,
I mean,
the days
about guy, he had a better rookie year than John Elway, Eli Manning, Peyton. Like,
mm-hmm.
A lot of guys struggled their rookie year in the NFL. Like, cut them a little bit of slack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Eshel Class was a brilliant in that Panthers game too. Like, he was making nice throws. I mean, he almost had a near interception. If you negate that and you negate the very easy throw to Stevie Johnson he made in the end zone, other than that, I mean, I thought he looked, you know, he looked phenomenal in that drive to be what turned out to be one of the best defenses in the league in the
right.
second game of the year last year. So,
and then he had a nice comeback drive to lead him down for a victory in Atlanta. Well, I should say he would have. However, Stevie Johnson fumbled as he was driving down before overtime. And then he hit Scott Chandler another big play to get him pretty much in field goal range, and he fumbled as well. But if not, that would have been another late game comeback where he really played well in the 2-minute drill.
No, I agree. All right, you guys are under the hoodies with Brian Shipley and Bill Kegel. No Mike tonight, and hopefully we get him back soon. He's just been he's been inundated with the red and black fever, we'll call it. So. All right, Brian, we're going to switch to a topic that I am going to learn something about and that you're going to teach me, which is the Major League Baseball draft. I'm very excited to ask you a couple questions about this. So I'm just going to start off with the first one. Who are your top five prospects?
Well, the top five for this year, you know, it's sort of, you know, most people don't think it's going to be a year where there's a Steven Strasburg or a Bryce Harper, a guy that you know is pretty confident is going to be a franchise changer, but that doesn't mean there's not a lot of quality players available. At the top end of the draft, I think the best prospect this year is a kid named Brady Aiken, who is a high school pitcher, and I hate to throw out this comp because this guy I think is easily the best, at least the most talented pitcher in the big leagues, but that's Clayton Kershaw. The reason I throw out the comp is Kershaw is big and tall. He throws 95 being a lefty, which is rare in its own right, and also has good breaking stuff, nasty 12-6 curveball. And if you look at what Brady Aiken has and sort of like, what's his starting point, he's tall, slender, left-handed, throws 95 on the radar gun, has a nice curveball and a nice changeup. And, you know, that sounds to me like a guy that's in the future could be a bona fide ace, one of the best 30 pitchers in the game. So I think that he'll probably go number one in the Astros. Number two, and he was a little cross-sport reference, I'd kind of compare this guy to Jadeveon Clowney. Not so much in terms of, impact talent, but just sort of what happened to both of them from their sophomore to junior years. Sophomore year, as soon as the 2013 draft was done, everybody had written in Jadeveon Clowney, first pick next year for sure, definitely going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what everybody did, too, for Carlos Rondon, a left-handed pitcher from NC State University, had a sensational sophomore season, pitched real well for Team USA at some tournaments over the summer, and everybody had him pegged as the first overall pick. However, due to, again, a bunch of different reasons, he got off to a real slow start this year. His manager kind of overworked him some. He really did something that's, as far as I'm concerned, is irresponsible as it comes, pitching him on 3 days rest after pitching over 100 pitches in a game. And with so many guys going down with Tommy John and arm surgeries, you know, that might shy teams away. So it remains to be seen if he can be like Clowney and still overcome those obstacles to be the first pick in the draft. But he's looking more likely to go 2-3, or at worst, number 4 to my Chicago Cubs. But his thing is he throws in the low 90s as a left-handed pitcher as well. but he's got what's referred to as the best slider in the draft and one of the best sliders anyone's ever seen coming from the amateur ranks, and he too projects to be a future major league ace. The next guy I go with is Nick Gordon, a high school shortstop, and the name might sound familiar is because his brother, D. Gordon, is the starting second baseman and formerly the starting shortstop of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's awfully athletic like his brother, and they also have their father, Tom, a.k.a. Flash Gordon, who pitched forever in the big leagues. So he comes from good bloodlines, a good baseball family. He's a super athletic shortstop that's really, really polished on defense. He can hit a little bit more than his brother, which is what makes him such a high prospect. But he's also got, although it's a tick below D speed, he also has D speed as well. And the thing I like about him is if he gets to pro ball and for whatever reason he can't hit, much like his father, he has a really good arm and was, I think, clocked at 94 on the radar gun this year. So if for whatever reason the first 2 years he can't hit, you can always give him a shot out as, give him a shot to be a pitcher. And then to round out the rest of the top five, at number four I go Tyler Kolek, who some people are referring to as a young Kerry Wood because he's a big Texan that throws extremely hard. He's been clocked over 100 miles per hour in a couple games. The problem is he doesn't really have any good breaking pitches or off-speed pitches, and his command's a little subpar. But if you're a pitching coach, I can teach a guy how to throw a curveball. I can't teach somebody how to throw 100 miles an hour. So I think that you'll also see him go pretty high. And then my last guy to round out the top five is Aaron Nola, who had as decorated a year as you can have this year in college. He was terrific for LSU. He doesn't have as high a ceiling as some of these guys. Most people don't think he'll be a future ace, but a lot of people think he's going to be a solid, dependable number two or three starter. And what really makes him a hot commodity to teams and a reason I think you'll see him be a top five pick this year is he's the type of guy that can fly through the minor leagues. So if you're taking Kolek and you have to teach him all these different things and sharpen his command and teach him these off-speed pitches, that's probably going to be 2018, 2019 before you see him in the big leagues. Whereas Nola, even though he doesn't have as high a ceiling, he might be able to make your team out of spring ball next year, and you have a guy that to plug in your rotation. And as we see with so many injuries and just a lack of supply, it's becoming harder and harder to find quality options in the rotation.
All right. See, this is why, Brian. Geez, your knowledge on amateur sports. So you and Keith Law, I think you two would know more about this stuff than maybe Brian Kenny.
Well, let me say, I don't get as heavily involved in the MLB draft as the NFL and NBA, mostly because, it's hard to find video on these guys. But with the Cubs being just so awful the last 3 years and having top five picks, I found myself more and more engrossed by it, sort of just find a young amateur player to pin my hopes on and the idea that the Cubs may be really good in 2016, 2017, 2018. So, I like to try to find guys and hope they end up with the Cubs. And, that said, this year I would probably have to go with Nick Gordon as my top choice for him, assuming the top two guys I mentioned, Rondon and Brady Aiken, don't somehow fall to number four to the Chicago Cubs.
Right. And, I'm going to ask you a question that you wanted to ask me. But in all honesty, I mean, I think you said you would ask, I could ask you, and the more I got thinking about it, the more I wanted to hear your opinion rather than my own. Would you prefer to draft a pitcher or a hitter with your top pick? I mean, just in my very basic knowledge, I'm more of an NBA and NFL guy. I do enjoy baseball, but like your Cubs, the Mets haven't been interesting or good in years. So I always think pitchers just because of their effect on the game. I think even over the course of, they start every five games or whatever, I do think it sort of alters the way the team they're playing against has to prepare for, whatever pitcher they're going to play. I think that the impact of a pitcher is bigger than any one hitter just because of their ability to kind of control the one game they're in a, I'm trying to think of the best way to articulate it, in a bubble. A pitcher has a greater effect on the one game than any one hitter does over the course of five games, the exception of very, very few.
Right, and you know, I totally see your point there, and this is something that I've changed my mind on over the years. You know, my favorite Cubs team ever was the 2004 team that had Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood, Carlos Zambrano, Greg Maddux, Matt Clement, all in the rotation, and I just love the way the team was built because every 5 days they had, you know, a bona fide, a well above average major league starter taking the hill for them, and I just thought that was the best way to build your team and sort of get better in a hurry. They'll go from the basement to being a really good playoff contender. We saw the recipe also worked really well for the San Francisco Giants when they had Tim Lincecum, Matt Cain, Madison Bumgarner, you know, these young arms that you can get it high in the draft, and then they turned out to be pillars of your rotation and lead you to the promised land. But now I think I've gotten to the point where I've kind of flip-flopped on that. I'd rather go with the hitter just for a few reasons. I mean, the proliferation of Tommy John surgery and arm injuries, I mean, it just doesn't – look at Steven Strasburg, who was the best pitcher to come out since Mark Pryor, and he's already had a Tommy John surgery under his belt. Matt Harvey, another guy I just loved who, you know, had as nice-looking delivery as you could draw up, he ended up having the Tommy John surgery and going under the knife. So I just think there's a lot more risk in pitchers because, you know, they seem to be ticking time bombs to me. I don't think you can say – if he gets hurt, I think it's going to be when he gets hurt, except for those rare breeds like a Greg Maddux or Tom Glavine or guys that somehow, some way never really ran into arm trouble. So that reason, and then the other reason I think I might go with a position player is if you draft a guy and he turns out to be, you know, a sensational starter for you, you know, like you said, like an ace, there's nothing better than having an ace of the rotation. But if he doesn't turn out to be an ace, then I think you're going to regret not taking a position player simply because, at best, assuming that guy doesn't get hurt, he's only going to play for your team 32 times a year. He's only going to take the hill once every 5 days and help the team win 32 times a year. Whereas if you get that stud position player, he's starting 150 to 162 games, helping the team win every day. You know, offense, defense can help, or excuse me, can hurt the opponent in a variety of ways. So at this point, I think if all things are equal, and I think both players are, you know, sort of have similar grades on them just from different positions, I probably would lean towards the position player, especially if he can play a defensive position that's hard to find, like shortstop, second, catcher, center field. I mean, I don't think I would draft a first baseman or a left fielder over a stud pitcher, but I do think I would draft a guy that can hit and play one of those tough positions to find good fielders for.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to disagree with that. It's just, you're right. And there are, for every Matt Harvey, I do feel like that there is a Justin Verlander, you know, a guy that's just crazy durable. But,
right.
But yeah, you're right. You're right with the risk. I completely see where you're coming from. Any guys that you could see, not quite like pool host level guys that could fall deep into the draft, but a guy that you think is kind of interesting that maybe nobody's talking about?
Well, the guy that I like, and he actually does get a lot of publicity because 3 years ago he was actually drafted in the first round by the Toronto Blue Jays. They failed to come to an agreement, and he ended up going to Vanderbilt. And heading into his junior year, which is the next time you're able to be drafted, many projected him to be a top five pick right up there in the same class with the pitchers we talked about earlier. And that's
right.
A player by the name of Tyler Beede, a pitcher who has just nasty, nasty stuff, but really struggled this year with walks and home runs and didn't have the type of season he wanted. And now he looks to be a guy that's really sliding down boards and a guy you might find in the early to late 20s. And I think anybody that gets him that believes that their pitching coach can help polish up his command, you know, because usually command is tied right to the pitcher's athleticism. You know, the more athletic you are, the better chance you have of repeating your delivery over and over again. And I think Beede's a terrific athlete. So he would, you know, if I believed in my pitching coaches, that's exactly the type of guy I would like, you know, to bring in as a potential absolute steal in the 20s. And then another guy I like is a catcher by the name of Max Pentecost. He's from Kennesaw State University. There's not many catchers available in this draft. He shows a patient approach. Most people think he can stick at catcher over the long term. I think the only reason that he's not going to be going higher is because before I heard of Max, I never heard of the college he went to. So, you know, we didn't see him tear it up against SEC-level competition like some of these other players. So for that, I'd be a little bit worried. But, you know, he seems to have the tools to be an above-average major league catcher, and those guys are extremely hard to find. So those would be sort of my two sleepers that I think will go later on tonight, but could turn out to be guys we look at 5, 6, 7 years down the line and wonder why they didn't go a little bit higher.
All right, you are under the hoodies. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
You know, while we're on the baseball thing, I just wanted to say, you know, rest in peace to what, who I feel is not only a baseball treasure, but it was an American treasure, and that's one Don Zimmer, who actually managed the Cubs for a couple of years. And I remember reading in my all-time favorite player, Ryan Sandberg's book, just some of the greatest Don Zimmer stories you can think of. And this guy just loved the game so much, was a terrific player until he got beamed in the head a couple of times, and it actually altered his vision. Anyways, so he went on to a career of managing. And this guy did things, you know, it shows you the different age of what it was like a generation ago. He did things that, if it happened today, it would be all over SportsCenter, Twitter, MLB Network, and he'd be getting fired on the spot. Stories that several times while he was the Cubs managers, he would actually have all the runners go while it was bases loaded, regardless of the count, how many outs there were. Every runner would start going, which, of course, if the ball's out of the strike zone and the player doesn't make contact with it, you know, that's a great way to get a triple play or a double play or have what could have been a huge inning just stop. I mean, I don't think that's something you'll ever see again. And, you know, they like to have double steals going while the pitcher was at bat. Just these crazy out-of-left-field things. But you know what? His players love to play for him. Just one of the most respected guys in the game. And just the type of guy that just eats, sleep, breathe, and bled baseball. And if he doesn't make you like baseball a little bit more, then I don't know whoever can. So rest in peace to a real pillar of the game.
Oh, no, I'm glad that you brought that up. I read that today. He was 83, I mean, and you're right. I think the lasting image of him, unfortunately, is Pedro throwing him to the ground for a lot of Red Sox fans. But, I mean, he was a very, very entertaining guy. If you ever hear him talk or you ever hear him interviewed or read anything that he says, he was a guy that was always on. He's not a guy that mailed it in, and it's really sad that guys from that generation are losing because they don't quite make them like Don Zimmer anymore. And it's really sad.
Right, he was a true character, and you just don't see that in the game anymore. And I understand why, because all these managers want to be the same cookie cutter guy. Because if you ever try to do anything outside the box, not that I'd ever want my manager to be sending guys when the bases are loaded, but I think, you know, sort of having a big personality or doing things outside the box and not doing stuff that, you know, could get you in trouble, you just don't see that too often anymore. It almost feels like, you know, these guys manage based upon what people will question the least after the game, because as long as you follow the book, follow the general rule of thought, and give the media a bunch of non-answers, no one will question you as hard as they might someone that is a little more lively, I guess might be a word for it. So
yeah,
it's just sad that, you know, we're really losing characters like that, not just in baseball, but in all sports.
Yeah, it really is sad. I mean, this is a guy, he's, you know, the only job he's ever had is baseball, and that's a dream of a lot of people, and he lived it, he knew it, and he never took it for granted, and I appreciate that in him.
Well said, never took it for granted. That's the perfect way of discussing it.
You guys are under the hoodies with Brian Shipley and Bill Kegel, and Brian, you know what? I don't know. I think maybe we'll wait on the NBA draft stuff, and let's just get right into the finals because we have about 18 minutes left, and I think this is a really intriguing finals, and not that, you know, we didn't have it last year, but I think last year's finals makes this one even more interesting. Let's start off with our picks, and we'll kind of go into why. Who do you have winning in how many games, and why?
Well, as much as I want to see the Spurs win, I have to go Heat, 6 games, and the reason why is one word, LeBron.
All right, I have the Spurs in 7, and I have, you know, just to kind of echo you, I have one word, and it's Popovich. I think he figured out the Heat last year, and I think that a lot of what happened last year, I don't think we'll see this year. I think, because if you remember last year, Game 6 was one of the best basketball games I've ever watched in my life. All right, and not just the excitement at the end of the game, which was great, which was fantastic, but Kawhi Leonard, if he makes one of those free throws, the game's over. There was just a lot of things that kind of happened. Bosh getting the rebound, you know, Ray Allen being in the right place at the right time. Like, the Heat almost lost last year in 6. And I do think that similar situation showing themselves. I think the Spurs are the best sports team, you know, best sports franchise at learning from what they do incorrectly in the past and fixing it later on. And I think they also do a fantastic job of preventing mistakes. I mean, the Spurs, I think I gave out the stat, you know, in an earlier episode, but the Spurs, you know, they're an older team. Everyone knows they're kind of an older team, but they didn't have a single player average more than 30 minutes a game. Even a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who has, you know, all NBA talent, and he's one of the better all-around players in the league, but he averaged 29 minutes a game. Their guys are healthy for this moment. The reason they played like that is for this moment. And I just don't see Popovich losing and making the same mistakes twice. He just doesn't strike me as that kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a lot of great points, and you're exactly right that there's no – I don't think there's another organization or coach in sports that coaches more with their eyes on the playoffs than the regular season than Popovich. You know, Devin is no more than when they played in Miami a couple of years ago, and he benched all of his main guys coming off of 3 games and 4 nights, and, of course, that did not make former Commissioner David Stern too happy.
I love that, by the way, because that team, I think, if I remember correctly, I think they only lost that game by like 3 or 4 points. And they didn't have they didn't have Parker, Duncan, Ginobili, or DL. I'm trying to think of who the fourth guy was. But, yeah, their big three and one of their other key players were out.
Yeah, and you know what, though? Sometimes not only does that rest up your players, but it also gives guys, I mean, I don't think there's a coach better at using his bench than Popovich as well. And that gave a lot of guys some nice experience against high-level competition. And that's only going to make your team better in the long run. So, I was happy with that.
Think about how they felt after they almost beat, you know, this newly formed monster at home.
Right.
You know, it was just impressive. And I don't know. I hated David Stern for that for a number of reasons. I didn't like him. But that was one of the big things. I couldn't – after I heard that, I was just disgusted.
Now, that was annoying, and I mean, I really hope the Spurs do win, because I think, although we've been seeing this for years, this might be the last chance for that core group of, you know, just guys that really go about it the right way with Duncan and Ginobili and Tony Parker. But you know, I still had to pick the Heat just because I think LeBron is just so sensational right now. I thought he deserved the MVP simply because, you know, as great a season as Durant had, not only does LeBron bring it on the offensive end and get his teammates involved and rebound, but I think he's hands down the best defender in the NBA too. So, you know, I feel like they can put him on whichever guy gets hot for San Antonio late in games. And at that point, I think effectively, you know, that guy's going to be clamped down for the rest of the game, because when he wants to stop someone, they're done. Just ask Lance Stevenson that the game after he had that hot game the other day. So I think just with LeBron and Wade's been playing pretty good, you know, this postseason, and lastly with you know, Bosh, he's pretty hit or miss, but if he's hitting the three-pointer that he's really improved over the years, I think they'll be pretty tough to beat, as well as San Antonio is playing right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's kind of interesting is that the Heat have actually had a pretty kind of a breeze through the playoffs. I think they played 4 games in the first round, 5 games in the second round, and 6 games in the third. So I actually think they're pretty rested, and that's good news for Wade, who, you
right.
know, he's you know, aptly called Flashes, which I, like I said, I enjoy. I got to ask you about this, too. And I'm tired of reading this crap about LeBron not being clutch, but if you talk to these kind of, you know, half-witted NBA fans, and they're like, oh, LeBron's not clutch, you know, LeBron's garbage, he chokes into crunch time. It's like, I almost attacked a guy at work the other day when he was going on this rant about LeBron not being clutch. I was like, does anyone else remember the first 10 minutes of the fourth quarter of game six last year? First 10 and a half minutes of just what? LeBron got his headband knocked off. And for whatever reason, I mean, obviously coincidental, but after his headband was knocked off, the guy was unguardable. Or do we remember game six I want to say it was the Thunder. It was game six against Boston, where LeBron just had this look on his face, just tore the Celtics apart. I think he scored like 54, 55 points. And everyone thinks this clutch thing is, oh, he hits big shots at the buzzer, and he doesn't. Everyone, he kind of got a little bit of crap for quote unquote bailing out on that play where he kicked the Bosch in the corner. What? Kobe,
which was the right play, by the way, and a great look.
It was
Bosch.
The right play because Bosch was wide open. He's a good shooter. He's a good 3-point shooter. And LeBron being clutch to me does not mean, oh, I hit the big shot at these defining moments or whatever, like Kobe and Jordan had. Kobe would have taken the shot that LeBron passed out of because Kobe, that's what Kobe does, and he feels like he has to. LeBron drawing the defense in and making a smart pass, not turning the ball over, setting Bosch up for a beautiful opportunity to win the game, and just because he didn't make it, that goes on LeBron. I don't think that really goes on anybody because, I mean, Chris Bosch, you make 40% of your three-pointers or whatever if you're really good at shooting threes. But LeBron opening the floor for other guys to make plays does not mean he's not clutch or is afraid of the moment. He's smart. That Chris Paul would have made the same play. But Chris Paul doesn't get any of the crap that LeBron does for making those kind of plays. Or if you remember, I think it was last season against the Jazz, a similar thing. LeBron drove to the basket, did a nice behind-the-back bounce pass to Haslam, and he missed the shot. And everyone's like, oh, LeBron passed out of the shot. He isn't passing out of the shot because he's afraid of taking the shot. He's passing out of the shot to set up somebody who's shooting from the spot that they're the strongest in. So I just wanted to just throw that out there and just get your opinion on that, Brian, because I'm really close to punching a hole in my wall thinking about this idiot at work. And if he's listening,
really,
then, you know, I don't care.
I can see really grind your gears, but, you're exactly right. I think that I lose respect a little bit any time someone says he's not clutch. I mean, that Skip Bayless argument is just so old. And I think it just comes down, I think it's this simple. When the game's on the line or it's a deciding game, game six, game seven, whatever, fourth quarter, tight game, what player in the world do you want with the ball? The answer is no doubt about it, LeBron James. And it just really comes down to that. I mean, this guy, I mean, what more does he have to do? He's won, what, back-to-back titles and went to a year before that. He took just awful Cleveland Cavalier teams deep into the playoffs. I mean, this guy raises the level of play around him every game he plays in. He's not my favorite player by any means. I don't really like the guy. But I also am the first person to admit that he's a generational-type talent, and I enjoy watching the guy play because he's terrific. He's one of the best. I think by the time he retires, he'll be in the handful of guys of the best players of all time. And I think he's not clutch, which I don't believe in quote-unquote clutch. Some guys are clutch and some guys aren't. I just don't really believe in that argument anyways. So I think it's ridiculous, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes to clutch players, I think everybody looks at the small sample size and just remembers what they did last time. But I think if you gave LeBron, let's say, 500 clutch situations that you would define clutch, and then you looked at his numbers after that, I would bet a good dollar that his numbers would look pretty much to what his career averages are, which are sensational, which means more often than not, he helped his team win in those clutch situations. So I just really don't know what more you can want from the guy other than you said, making a buzzer beater shot that, in the highlight generation is what everybody's looking for. But I just don't really care about things like that. All I know is he's the best player in the world and exactly the guy I wanted the ball in his hands to start the fourth quarter for my team.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So I just wanted to go on that tangent because I remember thinking, and I was like, man, the second I got done with that conversation, I was like, I can't wait to talk about this on the show and get Brian's opinion and Mike's opinion. It was one of those silly things that were just so short-sighted, and it's not even necessarily the LeBron thing that bothered me. It's the short-sightedness of people that sort of that just as a human being, hearing other human beings, that's probably my biggest pet peeve, other than people throwing gum on the pavement. But that's another story, and we don't really need to get into that in a sports show. But don't even be started. I stopped in gum over the weekend, and I'm still not over it. So, but anyway, man, so we have about 8 minutes left. So, what do you...
Do the NBA draft real quick?
Yeah, you know what, let's do the NBA draft. We gave our picks for the finals. We can't really say anything more than what's already been said about this game. So, yeah, you know what, Cleveland getting the first overall pick. I mean, it's a very unfortunate, it's a very unlucky city, but then they keep getting stuff like this stuff handed to them. So what do you think about that?
I think this is about as interesting as it will be as far as who they're going to take. They've been looking for a small forward to pair and a wing player to pair with Kyrie Irving and Deion Waiters seemingly forever, which is part of the reasons they made that desperation trade to acquire Luol Deng last year from the Bulls. And if you want a player like that, this is the draft to have it, is to have the number one pick. I personally, right now, as of today, I know most people think that Andrew Wiggins is the best player in the draft, and I think you can make a strong argument for that because he's such a sensational athlete. But I think Jabari Parker, sort of like we talked about with baseball earlier, whereas the guy that's going to, in a few years, look great versus a guy like Aaron Nola from the LSU pitcher I was talking about that could come in and help your team almost in an immediate fashion, I think that's Jabari Parker. And based on every move the Cavs have made the 2 years, they want to win now. So I think to grab Jabari Parker would be a win-now move, a guy that you can plug in for 15 points and 8 rebounds his rookie year, I think. And then all of a sudden you have a real nice young core of Irving, who I don't really like too much anymore, but that's a separate story again. Parker, and then my man Deion Waiters, who I still think is going to be a really two-guard in the NBA, really good two-guard in the NBA. But who would you, who do you have them taking? Who would you take if you were the new GM of the Cleveland Cavs?
Just because you're in win-now mode with the Cavs, and Joel Embiid, by all accounts, is, I wouldn't necessarily say a project, but he's not really a guy that's, you know, suited to go to the next level. I mean, I think in the NBA, I think you take best player available 100% of the time, and I think that's Wiggins. I think Wiggins, you know, what we didn't see from him in college, I think we will see from him in the NBA, if that makes sense. I think he's a guy that's just going to kind of, I don't know, necessarily take the league by storm quite like LeBron did, but I definitely think he's going to be the best player out of this draft. And I think in 5 years, you know, I think Waiters will most likely be gone from the Cavs. I don't like what Kyrie Irving has become as far as, because he used to see, he gives off kind of like a, and this might just be a thing against Waiters, because maybe he feels threatened by Waiters, and him and Waiters are very, very similar players. At least they try to be. I think Waiters tries to be a lot, Irving tries to be a lot like what Waiters is. But I think you go best player available, and I think you go Andrew Wiggins, because I think in 5 years he's going to be the best player to come out of this draft.
Right, and I totally agree with the theory, and I also think it's funny that we're talking about a team that's picking number one that hasn't been to the playoffs in years and calling them in win-now mode. It almost just seems a little ironic.
It does, I agree.
But yeah, you know,
that's great.
I agree. I mean, Wiggins is just such a ridiculous athlete. Well, the biggest question I have about him, and usually I hate to get into the intangible stuff and stuff that you can't really see or measure, but the thing that I didn't like about him in Kansas is that at the end of games or when the team really needed points, you know, he just never really seemed to really take the game over like you see so many. And I'm holding him up to a high level. I'm holding him up to the Durants, the Bryants of the world, the Kobe Bryants of the world, and I just never saw him where, you know, he sort of took over at the end of the game, or it was just, all right, give me the ball, we're not losing this game, you know, sort of strapping the team onto my back. But that said, you got to remember, he's only 18 years old, and when Kobe Bryant was 18 years old, he was one of the worst players in the NBA coming off the bench for the Los Angeles Lakers. Kevin Durant was pretty sensational as an 18-year-old. But, you know, Michael Jordan didn't get much playing time as a freshman in North Carolina. You got to give the guy a little bit of time to maybe develop that. But if I was the Cavs picking number one, what I would do to vet Wiggins before I would take him one is I want to make sure that other than his family, the most important thing in his life is to become the best NBA player he can be in a future Hall of Famer. If I don't think that answers a resounding yes, I would strongly consider going with Parker or Embiid over him.
All right, makes sense. We're going to skip the Bucks because I don't think there's any player in the draft that can turn that team around. I mean, I think we can kind of agree that, you know, it's out of, I mean, most likely the first overall pick is going to be Embiid, Wiggins, or Parker. You know what, just give me real quick. Who do you think the Bucks, if the Cavs take Parker, do you think the Bucks take Embiid?
Well, let me just say that if I was a 2014 draft eligible NBA prospect, I would most want to go to the Bucks just for the opportunity to try to date and marry the owner's daughter, who was certainly the star of the lottery show a few weeks ago. I don't know if you watched it, but I think she became a Twitter sensation overnight, and I think people wanted her to get more screen time. And you know, as far as not only that being you know, appealing to the eye, she's also the daughter of a very rich human being. So I feel like I would love to be drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks this year, which is not something that we say well ever. But I think quietly the Bucks, although their team's not very good, I think they might have had the steal of the draft last year, and a guy that a lot of people think in a few years could turn out to be the best player from that draft, and it's kind of a sleeper as a guy that could one day be you know, a superstar type player. Oh my God, I'm drawing a total blank on his name right now. It's a hard to pronounce European name. And you know how to pronounce the guy from Greece? His brother's in the draft. And Taka Polkino, whatever
God.
His name is.
Yeah, I can't even begin. Giannis is his first name. I can't even
right,
forget
Giannis
that name.
Is his name, and he's
like 25 letters in his last name. Yeah,
right. It's so tough. So I apologize to listeners that I just butchered that, but I really don't know how to say it. But that said, I think that he looks like a really good building block. If you look at his box score, you might not be overly impressed by him from his rookie year, but he's really raw, but yeah, really, really talented. And, you know, I read one article about him where another GM said he kind of looks like a poor man's Kevin Durant when you just look at his talent. So I think him with whoever they pair with him in his draft could be some real nice building blocks. So that's my long version of saying I would probably take Embiid if I were them. Since I have my potential wing stud, I'd like to get, you know, sort of a franchise center, a guy that can protect my rim, a guy that's going to block a lot of shots. And, you know, the best way for crappy teams like that to become relevant again is to get really good on defense, or like what the Pacers did, and he's going to instantly make you a better defensive team. And if his back holds up, he could turn out to be the best player of the draft a few years from now.
All right, we're going to skip around a little bit. We're going to go to the Boston Celtics, and I'm looking at a mock draft from Bleacher Report, and they have Aaron Gordon going to Boston. How do you like that fit?
Well, I think Aaron Gordon is certainly a sensational athlete, maybe even the best athlete in the draft. And, you know, he's athletic enough that he's gotten some Blake Griffin comps. I think he shot 42% from the free throw line, which, I mean, if you're a coach, you just can't leave him out on the floor in close games and your team's winning, because it's going to be the hack-a-shack thing all over again. So if I were them, I would take a guy that sort of tore up the NBA combine, and a guy that was on my radar for a while because Syracuse was in a heated recruiting battle with Indiana for his services. He ended up going to Indiana, and he's a big, tall, lanky power forward that some have compared to Chris Bosh. His name is Noah Vonleh. And last year, early in the college season, Indiana was playing Syracuse, and Boeheim said, I think he's the best center in college, not the best freshman, the best center in college. And he had a really, really nice season on an awful Indiana team. He hasn't gotten a lot of pub, but as far as guys that the NBA likes, which is tall, long athletes, he fits that to a T. He can come in. His offensive game is raw, but he's got some good moves down low. He's going to block shots, and he could develop that outside game one day like a Chris Bosh. So if I was the Celtics and I had my choice between Gordon and Vonleh, if Vonleh's still there, I'm taking Vonleh all day.
All right, and I know you have to go here shortly, but I got one more in the same mock draft as Julius Randle going number 7 to the Los Angeles Lakers. How do you like that fit?
Love it. I think that would be a terrific pick for the Lakers and give sort of a high-low option to pair with Kobe, as long as Kobe can stay on the floor, which has really been his biggest issue the past few years. And I just think overall, I mean, that's a guy that a few months ago, if you ever said you could get Julius Randle at number 7, whoever's picking number 7 would probably sprain an ankle running up to the podium to turn that card in. So I think
yeah.
that you're getting a top 3 or 4 talent in the draft. Does he have things to work on? Sure. But I think he's going to be a really, really solid player. Maybe not a superstar like some of the other guys at the top, but a really solid player that makes 4 or 5 All-Star games in his NBA career, and a guy that can be a reliable number 2 or number 3 on a contender. So I'd be all over him if I was the Lakers.
All right. And, well, you know what, let's end on that. Now, obviously, we're going to do a whole NBA draft show probably in 2 weeks, right before the draft. But Brian, man, it's good to be back. You know, I miss talking to you. You know, we've all just been sort of kind of busy lately. But, yeah, the new night for the show is Thursdays. We're going to do Thursdays. We're going to try to shoot for, you know, going to be from 6 to 7:30. But anyway, Al, for all of you that are listening, tell a friend and listen on Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com, or download us on iTunes and possibly soon Stitcher if you have that app. And follow me on Twitter at Bill Kegel, and follow Mike at Mike Pozeski, or at Mike Pozeski BSP. And follow all of us on Facebook. You can find us under our names. So, Brian, you got anything else before we go?
No, man, like you said, it's great to be back. I really missed it. Someone actually asked me today about the show, and I said we'll be back on it tonight. So I was happy that, you know, people were looking out for us, which is great. So.
Yes, sir. I agree. And to all of you listening, go ahead, spread the word. We are, we're going to try to figure out a way to do more shows each week. And just a little preface. Come NFL season, this show is going to turn into about 90% NFL talk. So everybody brace yourselves for that, too. We're not a strictly NFL show, but we will be during the NFL season. And, Brian, I want to tell you, I got my Sunday ticket all set to go. I am over the moon for the NFL season.
Yeah, with the way the Cubs are playing, it can't happen fast enough, that's for sure.
As a Mets fan, I could not agree more. But, all right, that's it for the show. Brian, hey, have a good night, and look forward to doing the show next week with you, buddy.
Sounds good, Bill. Talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Later.